Live on a Friday, it is the Buck Rising Show. Nick Cale and Braden Gall from 440 Sports in for our buddy Bucky today on 104.5 The Zone. And of course, on Zone TV with you for the next 3 hours. We'll take you up until 1 o'clock today. Braden Gall, how you doing, buddy? Good to be back in an actual studio with you again for the first time in a long time.
Good to see your face in person. I enjoy seeing people's faces in person. It was wonderful being at a sporting event last weekend where everyone celebrated something, watching it together, not on a screen.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to continue to do that. It's wonderful.
It's wonderful. All right. We got a lot to get to. Lucas Panzeca is producing today's festivities, as always. Coming up 11:20 today, Mitch Light from The Athletic, senior editor, will talk College World Series and some college football with him. Coach Mack, Dave McGinnis in our number three. We got a lot to get to today from the College World Series. We'll do some Titans. We'll do some college football as well. But just kind of a couple of things. I mean, this is Father's Day weekend, and like, it's about us, right? Like, if you have a son, if you have a daughter, if you got a wife, if you have a girlfriend, significant other, you know, even if you don't have kids, like, I feel like this is a weekend about us. And there are so many good things going into a Father's Day weekend for us to indulge in. I don't know about you, but like, when this show's over, I'm just going to go home, tell the wife and kids, honey, girls, daddy's taking his pants off and watching sports. You can be gone for the next 48 hours for all I care.
It's awfully personal. I'm a big fan of the no pants party, but
it's a good look.
It's all about the right setting. You need the right setting for the no pants party. No, my wife, we were sitting at dinner with my two daughters, 4 and 3 years old, and my wife, and they're like, well, what do you want? And my four-year-old's like, can I draw a card and make a picture for you, Dad? And I'm like, of course, honey. That sounds wonderful. Of course we can do that. The three-year-old's like, I want chocolate. And I'm like, okay, thanks, cool. Go back to eating. The three-year-old doesn't get anything yet. She doesn't understand. And my wife looks at me and is like, well, no, what do you really want to do? And I said, I want one day where no one asks me to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Don't talk to me. Don't look at me. Don't acknowledge my existence. Just leave me alone. Don't do anything. Don't ask me to, you know, cut your sandwich. Don't ask me to make your eggs. Just leave me alone. Just one day. Sports, television, leave me be, please. Uh-huh. Maybe I can play a round of golf. That's all I want.
There you go. I mean, there's going to be so many good things. Obviously, the College World Series. You got the U.S. Open. That's in full swing. No pun intended. You've got basketball, you've got hockey going on, baseball on the major league level. So, like, if you're, you know, obviously Father's Day weekend, this is all about your day.
No, the U.S. Open is awesome. College World Series, both of our teams in Tennessee are there. Not only are they there, but I think they're the two favorites to get to the championship series. Like, no homer here. I think Vanderbilt's the team that's going to win it all.
Right.
And I think Tennessee's legitimately the best team in their half of the bracket. On top of that, you got, I think Nashville SC's back tonight, I think, right? So they're back. The Euros are amazing. I love that whole entire tournament is almost as good as the World Cup, if not as good. I'm all in on that. I know Lucas was, you know, screaming about penalties and stoppage time for like Sweden or something before the show started.
Yep.
Because we're all so tied up with the Swedes. So it's a good weekend, man. Really underrated. And Omaha is just so much fun. I love Omaha. We got the huge all the NASCAR stuff is here. Mm-hmm. This weekend for the first time in like 40 years, so it's a pretty good weekend for sports fans.
All right, you guys can hit us up throughout the show, 615-737-1045, the number 737-1045. On Twitter, he is at Braden Gall. I am at Nick Cale, K-A-Y-A-L. Of course, hit us up in the comments on Zone TV, whether you're watching via YouTube, Twitter Live, Periscope, Facebook Live, plenty of ways to enjoy the show. So let's get to this College World Series conversation, because you, myself, and Lucas – we're having a little group text the last couple of days, and it's a fascinating, and not so much from actually what's going to go on in this tournament in Omaha, but just kind of the differences between the Vandy fan base and the Tennessee Volunteer fan base. And like, this is one of those things where like, this is great for our city. This is great for our state. I mean, we're occupying 25% of the spots.
Look, I'm excited about the baseball. The baseball's fun. I'm excited for Vanderbilt and Tennessee to watch the games, to see how deep they can go. Like, all the stuff on the field is awesome. It's great. Like, the coaches are great. Corbin's great. Vitello's great. The talent on both teams is great. Like, everything's awesome. But what really makes this special is how petty both of these fan bases have been towards each other over the last 6 weeks. It is so good. if you can't get involved, like, I don't even care if you don't like the sport,
right?
Which a lot of people don't. They don't. It takes them a long time to get into college baseball. I think it does take Tennessee or Vanderbilt getting to Omaha for people to sort of say, oh, I probably need to watch this. If they're not involved, they're probably not watching. And I understand that. It's a niche sport. There's no question. But it's not a niche sport to watch two fan bases try to rip each other's throats out on Twitter. Like, that is that's an American pastime.
Mm-hmm.
And it is so good. I think I'm starting to see, like, and again, I've ran this by you guys, and I don't know what the audience thinks, but I'd love to hear from Tennessee and Vandy fans on this, because, you know, Auburn, Alabama, they hate each other, but they're kind of the same person, right? Like, they're the same guy, the same girl, the same family, living on the same street, going to the same church. You know, they root for Bama and they root for Auburn. They're kind of the same person.
Just make your decision at birth as to who your football team is, and everything else is fine.
You're all from Alabama. You're kind of all the same. Let's just broad brush the whole state while we're at it. This is the whole thing. But, like, Vandy and Tennessee are two very different sets of people.
Right.
And, it, again, broad brushing here, of course, but it's like class warfare almost, which I think is so, like, it's so petty. The resentment is just reeks off of all of the Vandy people right now, because they're like, what do you mean you're good at baseball? You're not allowed to do it. This is our thing.
Right.
We are good at baseball. And Tennessee fans are like, we don't care. Like, this is our third most important sport, maybe our fourth most important sport, and we're having a good time cheering for something because we haven't been happy about something in a long time. So just leave us alone. One person is the high class, like, martini drinker who's been at the sophisticated cocktail party for 15 years. And they've been going to that party for a long time. They've had invites, and they're allowed to come, and they know how to act when they show up at that party, right? Black tie, like, whatever. Be sophisticated and classy. Act like you've been there before. Tennessee, like, kicks in the back door with, like, a mullet luge and, you know, completely hammered, just walking into the party, like, acting like a complete fool. And Vanderbilt, they're like, come on, guys, what are you doing? Act like you've been here before. And Tennessee's like, we've never been here before. We don't know what to do. It's fun.
But, like, here's the thing, too. And you mentioned, you know, the differences. And, you know, we don't need to go into what Vanderbilt prioritizes or what Tennessee prioritizes. But, like, you know, the Vandy boys, like, this is Vanderbilt's pride and joy. Tim Corbin, two titles since 2014. And you look at Tennessee, and we were talking about this in the green room. You know, they've been so bad for so long in football. And then they get their hearts broken in the middle of NCAA tournament time with, you know, the basketball team. It's like finding, we're not sitting here saying, like, dude, you should get into Tennessee tennis or Tennessee lacrosse or something that legitimately nobody actually pays attention to. But, like, you should jump on board if you are a UT fan and almost get away from the mindset of, like, quit being negative. You're so conditioned to expect the worst that you almost don't even enjoy what's going on before your very eyes.
Have you seen that? I haven't seen that.
No?
I mean, even people that don't like college baseball that I know are Tennessee fans have said, man, this Vitello guy is pretty cool. Like, I love this, and I'm excited to watch the games. And I think, by and large, everybody has sort of gotten on board. Also, Tennessee fans are as thirsty as any fan base gets right now because it's been 15 years of garbage. Like, the basketball team has been good, obviously, but football is what matters. And so when football, like, you're trying to fill that football-sized hole in your chest, and that's what, even for just a couple of months, and this is what I don't understand, and I do think that Danny White and the UT administration is going to fix this. They're already working on the contract with Vitello. That's sort of already, they're already way down the road on that. So they are going to pay him, pay the assistants, and then invest in Lindsey Nelson Stadium to bring it up to speed with all the other, you know, high quality teams in the SEC. They are going to invest. You don't get a ton of return on that dollars and cents wise. The bean counters don't like those decisions. But think about what your life would have been like if you're a Tennessee fan over the last six or eight weeks. What would you have been talking about with your buddies? What would you have been talking about on the radio? What would you have been reading on Twitter? What? How questionable the linebacker depth chart is for the defense? Like, what else are you going to talk about in May and June as a fan? Are you going to spend 8 weeks just dragging your football program?
Like that one run D. Beckwith had in the spring game?
Right, like, what else was, like, this is the whole point of having really good other programs.
Of course.
Is to take your mind off your football program that sucks right now and not just, like, mire yourself in, like, and bog yourself down in these unknowns about the Josh Heupel. Is he the answer? Like, no, we get to put that off. And you know what happens? We got 2 more weeks. And what happens is then it takes you almost right up to media days.
Mm-hmm.
You get about a 3 or 4 week break to be, you know, a human being, get your vacation out, get your whatever done, honey-do list, and then you get to go to SEC Media Days, and all of a sudden, boom, it's football season.
Right.
That's what baseball gives you, is like happiness for like 2 months, and it fills a void. Otherwise,
it's almost like a sports mental vacation in a way.
Yeah. And you don't have to spend your whole day like worried about the Vols' fourth starter. Like, no. Who cares? Like, yeah. It's not. Just enjoy the game. Enjoy the atmosphere. And here's the other thing. Enjoy being the villain.
Right.
They're the villain in this. Vandy is, I guess they're the good guy. I don't know. But like Tennessee.
Yeah, Vitello, they're the good guy because, it's hard to hate on Vanderbilt unless you're a Tennessee guy,
it's
right?
It's impossible to hate Tim Corbin. You cannot hate Tim Corbin. You can hate Vanderbilt. You cannot hate Tim Corbin.
Agreed.
But Vitello and the Vols, like, I guarantee you, Tennessee fans, if Tony Vitello coached anywhere else, you would hate him. You would hate him because he's that's the kind of guy he is. You love him when he's your guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's right now, he's Tennessee's guy all the way. Yep. And relish the role of being villain. It's fun, man. It's fun. This whole petty thing, I love it.
All right, let's get some phone calls. If you guys want to jump in, 615-737-1045. Obviously, College World Series gets going tomorrow. And, of course, we all look forward to the possibility of a Vanderbilt-Tennessee matchup where heads could explode. I mean, it literally could be like the Book of Revelations. I mean, waters, you know, what is the scene from Ghostbusters at the end when they're talking about, like, rivers start bubbling and the
legs
dead
of
rise?
Frogs or something?
Yeah, it's just crazy.
I need to read up on my revelation.
Let's get to the phones. Let's try Frying Pan, who is first up. What up, Frying Pan? How you doing, bud?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. So my call is it's two parts to it. The first thing is with Tennessee baseball, you know, I followed them back in the 90s when they had Todd Helton. And, you know, it was fun. Of course, football was good in the 90s. It was one of our best decades. But I followed it because we had, like, a superstar player in Todd Helton. And then, you come along the 2000s, and I don't remember a whole lot from the 05 team. And the reason maybe I didn't keep up with, you know, Tennessee baseball as much in 05 is Tennessee football was coming off of going to Atlanta, playing Auburn in football. I was like, oh, man, you know. And so we as Tennessee fans didn't probably cling as much to a winning sport like, you know, baseball is now because we had football. But now, like y'all said, Tennessee fans are thirsty. They're hungry for a winner. So I've been all in with the baseball. Now, real quickly, my other part of the – call is the hate for Vanderbilt. And you know, growing up here in Middle Tennessee, being born in Nashville, I liked Vanderbilt. I followed them in basketball when they had Billy McCaffrey. I had Vanderbilt shirts, but I was a Tennessee fan first. Where it started, and this is, you can talk to a lot of Tennessee fans, they'll probably tell you the same thing. It started in 2005 when they finally beat Tennessee in football.
Is that Jay Cutler?
I didn't hear the end of it. Mm-hmm. We beat them 23 years in a row, and I didn't say anything to Vanderbilt fans. It was just like little brother, it was a cakewalk. They beat us 1 year. I heard it for 365 days straight, and I was like, are you kidding me? And so then I was just like, I hate Vanderbilt. And so that's where the hate comes from. But I don't hate Tim Corbin. I respect his program, but I hate Vanderbilt. So right. Thanks for taking my call, guys.
Appreciate it, buddy.
Now,
you can't acknowledge the little brother, right? Because the moment you give them credit, you know, like, you're admitting they exist.
I thought he was going to say James Franklin, actually, because there's a lot of people that would point to James Franklin being at Vanderbilt as the moment they started hating Vanderbilt, because they always sort of were harmless before that. I think that 05 team that went up to Knoxville, I believe, was the Jay Cutler team. But, again, that 05 baseball team, that was my last year in Knoxville. Mm-hmm. And that was Luke Hochhaver, number one overall pick. J.P. Arencibia, who's now calling games for ESPN, I think. You've got, I think, Julio Borbón played in the majors, was a center fielder on that team. That was, I was at Lindsey Nelson more than I was at Thompson Bowling in 2004-2005. Those teams were awesome to watch. I'd like to think we were on the bandwagon pretty early.
I got a J.P. Arencibia story for you.
Ooh.
On the other side, 615-737-1045. If you guys want to jump in,
that's a tease right there.
We will continue with your calls. California Rob, hang tight. We'll get you. You lead us off on the other side. 615-737-1045. Nick Cale, Braden Gall in for Buck Rising today. This is the Buck Rising Show on 104.5 The Zone. All right, 10:22. Welcome back in, Buck Rising Show here on a Friday. Nick Cale and Braden Gall, 440 Sports in for Buck today. It is 104.5 The Zone, and of course on Zone TV, 615-737-1045 is the number to get in. We will get Coach Mack up here in just about 2 hours. Mitchell Light from The Athletic, an hour from now, on both College World Series and College Football Playoff expansion conversation. And we'll continue on with your calls here in a second. But seriously, like, if this ends up being at some point Vanderbilt and Tennessee, I mean, is this the kind of thing that you think, to a certain extent, I'm not going to compare it to, you know, a cup run in hockey or a Super Bowl run in football, but is this the kind of thing that you'll see in this city where, like, there's definitely a fever pitch to it,
I don't know.
Speaking to the sport? That's
a great question. I think right now I would argue that Julio Jones is the number one topic in the city, right? Like, if you're a sports fan, Julio Jones is still number one. Like, yeah. Oh, Julio Jones wiped his rear end. Oh, my God. It was awesome. Did
here's
you guys see
it? About it.
Here's a photo from the official Titans account about Julio Jones. I would say that the Tennessee-Vandy combo in Omaha is probably number two, right? Like, isn't that the... I don't know. Like, unless college football expansion is sort of on people's minds.
Next week, I think Tennessee and Vandy, especially if they kind of get off to the start they expect to, I think that's going to rule everything.
I mean, Father's Day, the U.S. Open probably is top of mind right now for most people, too. So
the more it trends towards a national championship series of Tennessee-Vandy, that's going to take over.
I do think, because if you're a Vandy fan, you are probably not scared of Tennessee at all. You are the better team. You've got the best two pitchers in the world. Like, I would pick Vanderbilt to win the whole thing right now. I would pick them to beat Tennessee in a championship series. So I think Vanderbilt fans should feel really good about themselves. But there's that little tiny part of you deep down inside that is absolutely petrified to lose your championship at the hands of Big Brother in East Tennessee. That would be the worst possible thing that could happen to Vanderbilt fans. Because this is your sport and it's your baby.
Yes.
And for Tennessee to come in and do what they've done, and if they were to beat you when you have the best two pitchers and when you've got Leiter and Rocker, it would just – and to rub your faces in it.
Yeah.
That is got to be terrifying if you're a Vanderbilt fan.
It's kind of like, you know, the hot chick and the ugly chick, where the hot chick has all the success, right? She's the prom queen. She's the cheerleading captain. And, you know, the ugly chick is kind of, you know, in one of those little clubs. You know, she does the math club or whatever she does.
I do not condone any of this from Nick Hale.
And then all of a sudden the hot chick joins the math club and she's like, you know, can't you just give me my little 15 minutes of fame? This is my little niche. And now you're invading my space.
Yeah, it's, again, Vanderbilt fans in reality should not be scared of a matchup against Tennessee. It's an opportunity to sort of put them in their place with, like, the best two pitchers in the world. Like, again, you should win the series. You should win the championship. But, man, if for Tennessee fans, like, if they were, to Lucas's point, like, if they were to both win this weekend, Vandy plays on Saturday evening and Tennessee plays on Sunday afternoon, they both are, they're the top two favorites to win their side of the bracket. If they were to get through to the winner's bracket and be playing next Wednesday and Thursday, each with only needing one win to get to the championship series, I think it picks up pretty heavily. And all of a sudden we're kind of obsessed with this as a state. And it's great for the state. It's just so much fun. And for people like us who talk about sports, oh my God, please play in the national championship series. Because again, the dynamics at play are endless between Vanderbilt and Tennessee.
615-737-1045. Let's bring in California Rob. California Rob, you're on 104.5 The Zone.
Yes. Hello. How you doing?
Doing good, bud.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you.
Is this thing on?
Okay, then. No.
All right. Go ahead, California Rob.
I got pettiness as far as... yeah, we got pettiness.
Yeah. Rob, turn your radio off.
Can you hear me? Turn my radio off.
Yeah, turn the radio. What is this, your first day? Come on. Let's go.
Yeah, my first day of school.
Yes. Hey.
Okay, now here we go. Like, pettiness and toilet paper. All right?
Yeah.
Tennessee State University has not had a baseball team in 28 years. But how about a month ago they was doing a study on bringing in hockey, ice hockey, to Tennessee State University? First of all, let's get a baseball program as far as, you know what I mean? That's American as it could be. What? I mean, ice hockey. Who in the world... I love ice hockey, but who would Tennessee State play?
I don't know. I've never really heard people refer to it as ice hockey.
I don't know much about the OVC Hockey League.
Yeah.
That's a new one for
me. Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. What team in the OVC, first of all, has a hockey team?
Well,
you know what I mean?
So they would find it. Again, I have no clue
Thanks for the call, Rob.
What the decision makers at TSU are deciding between baseball or hockey. I don't have any insight, folks, to offer you on that one. You know, I think they're adding either of those two programs, I think, is good for the school, good for the community. I don't know. I have no clue what it means for who they're going to play or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, that's let's talk about Julio Jones.
Yeah. I was lost by the moment we took that call.
He said toilet paper, and I thought Julio Jones.
I was getting ready to do my J.P. Aaron Sebia impression, and I don't know. California Rob was just...
Don't do an impression of a person doing an impression.
All right.
That's a rule on radio, I think.
All right. Let's move on. So you and I did a couple of shows during the Julio hype week of, all right, any day now, we'll roll the calendar over to June 1st. I think you and I were on right before Memorial Day. So our first crack to kind of talk about the move since it went down, I got to give you credit because you had meant one thing that stood out on some of your takes about Julio was, look, yeah, this guy's really good and we could use him, but I believe you said it, and I'm paraphrasing, don't just assume you're just going to steamroll the Colts now. And the odds makers pretty much agree. I saw this with Julio and before Julio and after Julio. The Titans Super Bowl odds went from 33-1 to 28-1. So, all right, you're up a little bit.
That's a lot for a wide receiver.
Yeah, it's a nice little jump for Vegas, a skilled player.
Yeah, that's a lot.
AFC Championship from 16-1 to 14-1 odds. But the odds to make the playoffs remain the same at minus 133. That was before and after Julio Jones. And we know the odds makers in Vegas love the Colts for whatever reason. Maybe it's just the history they have against the Titans. But to your credit, you said, look, this doesn't mean all of a sudden we're just going to waltz by Indianapolis. And I think the experts in the desert agree with you.
And I don't think it makes them puts them on the top tier in the AFC. You know what would put you in the top tier in the AFC and would make you an even bigger favorite over the Colts? Because, again, you're the favorite over the Titans are favored over the Colts to win the division before Julio Jones and after Julio Jones.
Yeah.
They are the favorite to win the division, period. And I think losing the division would be disappointing, but they both had 11-5 records last year. What makes you one of the best teams in the AFC is the complete sweeping changes to the defense working.
Yeah.
That's what makes you a favorite in the AFC. That's what puts you on par with Kansas City or Baltimore or Buffalo. That's what separates you from Indianapolis is DeNico Autry and Bud Dupree and Caleb Farley and like six or seven new guys on defense that are being asked to play big roles. Like Christian Fulton stepping into a starting role, potentially as a slot corner maybe, from last year. Like the overhaul on the defense. And I think Autry is actually one of the most underrated pieces. I don't think people talk about him enough because not only is he going to benefit from playing next to Jeffrey Simmons and help everybody around him, and he's disruptive, you also took him from the Colts. So I think Autry's the most underrated signing of all of these pieces. But that's what's going to win you a Super Bowl. That's what's going to get you to the AFC Championship game. The offense is great. With Julio, it's even better.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no question about any of that stuff. And if you get in a shootout with the Chiefs or the Bills, maybe Julio is the difference. But the reason you're going to win anything this year is the overhaul on defense. That's what really is going to change it.
Yeah, what's amazing about all of this is, you know, you get a guy like Julio Jones, and okay, he's going to take over for what Corey Davis did, probably do more than that from a numbers standpoint, assuming he's healthy and he's on the field. But, you know, you look at all those defensive moves, and we've seen them this week. You know, I've seen Julio videos of Julio Jones. You know, he was running through the tires and over and around the bags and all that nonsense that people get excited about on Twitter because they have to report something. But the defensive moves, if you think about this, and look, we could sit here and look at Jenkins and Dupree and everybody else that they brought in, but I'm almost wondering, and this is kind of a contradictory statement. You go out and get all those guys defensively, but the way this sport has been officiated, the way this league is trending, it's almost like you can go out and get difference makers, but do you truly believe in your heart of hearts right now, if you're just assessing the Titans, that you can get enough stops against Patrick Mahomes in a game that matters? Or is the mindset have to be, you know what, we brought in Julio, we got to match them score for score. Like, we can't afford punts.
I think
field goals are losses.
Yeah, I get your question. I think the goal is to do a little bit of both.
Sure.
Like, again, I think the expectation is the offense takes a slight step back from last year. It's the greatest offense in franchise history. Even with Julio, I assume you're taking maybe a slight step back. It's a lot to ask Derrick Henry to run for 2,000 yards again.
Yeah.
Now, you get Lawan back healthy. You lose Jonnu Smith and Davis. I mean, we know all the pieces that have moved in and out of the lineup and on and off the roster. I think rational human beings should expect the offense to take a tiny step back, 5 to 10%, whatever that might be back. You might be better at certain things, like going down the field. You might be better at going down the field now because you've got A.J. and Julio. And that's going to create a ton of room for Derrick Henry underneath, because as a defensive coordinator, you do have to pick your poison. And generally, you pick to stop the big plays, because those change games so fast. You have to let Derrick Henry eat against the seven-man front, and that's a recipe for disaster. But what you're expecting on the other side is, let's go from 27th in the NFL to just like 15th in the NFL.
Yeah, just be middle of the road.
We may take a step back on offense, half a step back, whatever, but we need to take two or three steps forward on defense. And if we do that, we're a far more balanced team that can get the occasional stop against Mahomes and can go toe-to-toe on offense with him. That's the goal here, and that was the game plan for John Robinson in the offseason. And I think he actually executed it pretty well. I think all those people that were yelling at him about the wide receiver position after the draft, and I was like, guys, you're going to need Monty Rice, okay? Like, Monty Rice is an important piece potentially, not necessarily this year, but down the road. Guess what? Does anyone think that Rashawn Evans is coming back after this season?
No.
You're going to need a middle linebacker.
Mm-hmm.
Jayon Brown's not under contract. You're going to need a middle linebacker. So, you know, Dez Fitzpatrick, can he play as a number three or a four? I think he's pretty good as a four. I think Josh Reynolds is pretty good as a three.
Oh, I love Reynolds as a three.
I think he's pretty good. He put up like Corey Davis numbers as a four for the Rams last year. I think tight end is still a question, but we'll see what they do there. There's a lot of stuff to like about what they did in the offseason. I think Elijah Molden's going to play every game. He's going to play in every game. That's how good that the nickel corner they drafted out of Washington in the third round. They took him ahead of some pieces. I think he's going to be really good. So I like Caleb Farley's going to start right away. Mm-hmm. If he's healthy, which he should be by camp.
Right.
I mean, they got an offensive lineman that's probably going to play a lot. Raiden's at right tackle potentially, or at least compete for playing time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. He did a pretty good job executing the offseason plan, man.
So you're feeling pretty good where the team is as a whole before we ratchet this thing up a month from now.
Yeah. If I'm a Titans fan, why wouldn't you be excited about what they've done?
Yeah. All right.
Again, look at the front line now.
I mean, I think if you're just looking at it from the standpoint of the two biggest names, Bud Dupree, Julio Jones, you've got two guys, one who's in the prime of his career, coming off of an injury, but is certainly shown how potent he can be. And then you got the other guy at the twilight of his career, who's a first ballot Hall of Famer, but also missed half of last season. Like, if I would ask you right now, who's the guy that you have the most confidence in that will pan out this year? Is it Julio or is it Bud?
I'm not a doctor.
But I play one on the radio.
But that's really the only thing that matters. Like, I don't have any questions about either of them if they're healthy.
Like, oh, yeah, of course not.
I don't have any questions. So you're basically asking, like, all right, is it a hamstring or is it a knee? Which one do you have more faith in coming back? And, you know, obviously the older guy, you'd probably say, is more susceptible to injury. But that's a total, you know, I'm not a doctor, so I don't know. You have to assume with that kind of money they're giving them on the cap that they're banking on them being healthy. Same thing with Caleb Farley.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the only reason you draft him at 22 is because you've done your research on the medicals and your doctors have said, yeah, it looks good.
Yeah.
Because the issue on the defense is that there's just a lot of questions. I like a lot of the answers on paper. I like the answers of Autry and Dupree with Landry and Simmons. I like that lineup up front. That looks good. Bringing back Jayon Brown on a cheap prove-it deal. That's a nice – I love that move and package him with Rashawn Evans. Okay, mm-hmm. Now you're looking at the Hooker stepping in for Vaccaro. Okay, I really like that. That's on paper. That looks really nice. The corners, you moved on from a lot of experience. Without Butler and Jackson, you're asking a lot of guys. Caleb Farley's going to have to play a lot. Jenkins is going to have to play a lot. Molden, Fulton. There's just a lot of questions.
Right.
On paper, you like the answers.
Yeah.
Let's see what it looks like, but on paper, the answers are nice.
615-737-1045, the number 737-1045. You can also hit us up in the comments on Zone TV. We've got TSU hockey would wind up as a Big Ten affiliate like Notre Dame is in the Atlantic Hockey Conference. All right, good comments there. Ron Slice checking in. He's on the U.S. Open, and he's betting on Siwoo Kim. So the sleigh ride is riding on a Siwoo Kim for the U.S. Open. By the way, Ron Slice, I think, a guy, degenerate gambler, which is right in my wheelhouse, so I can't really throw stones, but the fact that you're betting on Siwoo Kim in the U.S. Open, there's a reason why they give out that number at the end of ads. Just saying.
Ron Slay is a modern American treasure.
1-800-GAMBLER. All right, final thing, and we'll continue on. We'll take some Titans calls on the other side if you guys want to jump in, 737-1045. I saw this like a day or two ago where Schefter tweeted out that it's official now. I know there was a lot of like releases of, oh my God, is this the Madden cover? Patrick Mahomes, Tom Brady, joint MVP cover. And I was watching some of Buck yesterday on the show, the Buck Rising show, and Titans fans are legitimately bent that Derrick Henry is not. I'm thinking, if you're aware of the Madden cover history, it doesn't happen every year, but there's a good sizable portion in the 30 years of that game that when you're on the cover, it's like Sports Illustrated. Things go wrong. I don't want Derrick on the cover.
Well, and this is how out of the loop I am on video games. Lucas is like, people don't even buy him hard copies anymore anyway. And I was
I
hadn't thought about that.
Yeah.
Like, why would you care, first of all? Like, also, with all due respect to Derrick Henry, who is obviously one of the best running backs on the planet, he's not bigger than Tom Brady or Patrick Mahomes. So, like, let's just be honest. If a company comes to you and says, listen, we'd like to put Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes on the cover, you don't say no to that. Like, mm-hmm. you say okay. So, again, to your point, there's a lot of reasons to not be upset about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even if you're not superstitious, like, I'm not superstitious at all, but why take a chance?
Yeah, right.
It's like, let's just not put Derrick Henry on the cover. How about
yeah. No, I just need
avoid that.
I just need King Henry to eat when it matters most because, look, and I am a little superstitious. I mean, if you go back and you just pull up the history of that cover, I'd be willing to bet more than 50% of the guys that were on the cover ended up having some sort of injury that season.
Can we get a fact check on that, Lucas?
We might need some fact checks on that. Is Google available? Can Facebook fact check us?
Check the inner tubes.
What was it?
How many guys have been on the Madden cover that have been hurt that year?
He says 50%.
I mean, that game's been around since at
least...
You can't
just throw out these numbers all willy-nilly here.
I mean,
we got to check you on that.
I'm pretty sure Madden came out like in 92 or 93. And John Madden was on the cover for the first couple of years.
Did
and then
you
players
see the
were.
Number that John Madden has made? Did you guys see this?
Yeah, 69?
$150 million.
It's a good life if you can get it.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Remember those old Miller Lite commercials he used to
Eat
do
your heart
out,
Gruden.
Yeah. Take that, Gruden, with your Spider 2Y banana. Try marketing that. All right. Coming up next, we will get to some college football discussion, as well as your phone call, 615-737-1045. College football playoff expansion. The argument is, well, it's gotten stale. But what happens when you get from 12 to 6 or 8 down to 4 and the staleness returns? Then what do you do, Mr. I want everybody allowed into the playoff guy? Back after this, 104.5 The Zone. All right, welcome back in Buck Rising Show here on a Friday. Nick Cale, Braden Gall from 440 Sports in for Buck today. Hanging out till 1 o'clock. Lucas Panzeca producing as usual. I believe then it will be Lucas and Will Bowling in for Blaine and Mickey. College football playoff expansion talk coming up. More College World Series talk as well with Mitch Light from Athlon Sports in just about 34 minutes. Coach Mack, Titans Radio in the final hour of today's show. But we were just mentioning about how, you know, Derrick Henry and some Titans fans were hoping that their guy would grace the cover of Madden 22. It will be Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes in an MVP goat and baby goat dual cover. But we were talking about the Madden curse. So
we got some feedback, some numbers.
We've got some data. This is from CBSSports.com. It all started with Garrison Hurst back in 1998. Of course, former Georgia running back. I believe he was a 49er. And I want to say he either broke his leg or shattered an ankle.
Yeah, with Cardinals, I think.
Was it the
right?
Cardinals? Okay.
Yeah, I think it was the Cardinals.
I think he was originally a Niner, but that might have been like early 90s after he left Georgia.
So who? What else you got? So, all right.
So you got Garrison Hurst, and then the following year, Barry Sanders was on the cover in 2000 with John Madden. But I think Barry Sanders had already retired at that point, right?
Maybe that was factored into it.
Okay.
I don't know. We'll have to check on the timeline on that.
Here's a local one. 2001, Tennessee Titans running back Eddie George. Verdict, cursed. CBS says George went on the rush for more than 1,500 yards in his cover season, but he also lost a career-high number of fumbles, cough up the ball in the Titans' season-ending playoff game, and never averaged more than 3.4 yards per carry for the rest of his career. So,
which is like his career average. That's not a curse to me.
That sounds like a running back hitting a wall.
Well, I mean, or having like fumbles are a random stat, too. Like fumbles, you know, unless you're like Tiki Barber, who just like fumbled all the time and then figured out how to stop fumbling. That to me, if you had 1,500 yards in the season that you were on the cover, that is the opposite of the Madden curse.
Okay, fair. That makes sense.
To me, like, this
no,
is
that's
about,
logical.
Right? Like, getting hurt the year you're on the cover.
2002, Vikings quarterback Dante Culpepper's on the cover. The year before, he threw 33 touchdowns and was 11-5 as a first-time starter. The following year, as he's on the cover, that cover year, 14 touchdowns to 13 picks, fumbled 16 times, and went 4-7.
Yeah, that's bad. Okay, that counts.
Okay. St. Louis Rams running back Marshall Faulk, 2003. Mike Vick, 2004, although they went to the NFC Championship that year.
So no curses so far.
But see, it's weird. It's like they're sitting here and they say verdict, cursed, or not cursed. And they're saying Mike Vick was cursed.
During that season?
Well, it says he a fractured fibula less than a game after the game's release sidelined him for all but five games.
There you go. That's the Madden curse, right?
4 years later, he's in jail.
Well, there's that too.
Ray Lewis, McNabb, Sean Alexander. Hey, here we go. Another Titan. 2008, Tennessee Titans quarterback Vince Young. He was rookie of the year in 06. For his cover year, though, Young threw just 9 touchdowns compared to 17 picks.
That was his first full season, I think, right, as a starter? Mm-hmm. Okay. But again, I don't think he got hurt that year.
I don't know if it's necessarily always injury related or if it's just poor production or whatever it might be.
Again, this is why I'm not superstitious.
Okay. Fair enough. All right, let's get to some college football playoff expansion talk. Buck Rising Show, 104.5 The Zone, Nikhail Braden-Gall in for Buck. Mitch Light will join us in about 30 minutes. So we're going to go from 4 to 12 in a couple of years. What I found interesting was, like, and look, I am against expansion from the outset. I knew it was coming. I just figured 6 or 8. I didn't think they would plunge into the deep end with 12 teams quickly.
You know who did that, right? The SEC. Greg Sankey is who controlled that.
Damn them.
Greg Sankey. Well, think about it. At 8 teams, you have 2 at-large spots.
Right.
6 automatic bids, 2 at-large spots. Right now, there are 4 at-large spots. Why would the SEC go down?
That's true.
And so the SEC is actually, what I've been told is the SEC and Greg Sankey is the reason it went from 8 to 12.
Mm-hmm.
Because they said, look, all you other conferences, you want your automatic bids, right? The Pac-12 and the Big 12 want their spot in the playoff, the group of 5. We'll give you that. You need to give us some more at-large spots so we can take all of them. Like, that's basically what happened.
So we can have 3 or 4 teams
We can get 3 or 4. Each of the last 3 years, if you did the exercise, 4 SEC teams would have gotten into the top 12 each of the last 3 years. And at least 3 would have gotten in a couple other times before that. So the driving force between expanding from 8 to 12 was actually the SEC. And it makes sense. It makes sense.
And here's the thing. But this is, I guess, I'm going to just position this for the guy who's been saying this whole thing is stale. I'm tired of Alabama-Clemson every year. Alabama-Clemson, throwing in Oklahoma, throwing in Ohio State. I'm sick of the same thing. It feels like the NBA playoffs. Okay. So we're going to go to 12. And look, motivation will still be high for the Bamas and the Clemsons. It's not like, you know, they didn't reach the college football playoff or the BCS championship and they didn't want to be in a bowl game because they lost their conference championship. So when we go from 12 and we get to 4 and we still end up with Alabama and Clemson, what's your argument then? Because you're going to tell me you're tired of the staleness. So this is going to solve staleness, which it's not.
It does for up until that point. but that's what it's doing. Think about this. Think about a Kentucky-Missouri game at the end of October when you're both 6-1.
Okay.
That game all of a sudden has incredible importance.
Sure.
South Carolina, you know, is 5-0 versus Arkansas, who's 5-1. That game wouldn't have mattered much before. Now it's hugely important. And then think about all the other conferences and all the other division races around the country. And while you can argue that the juice or some of the air is let out of the balloon with Georgia-Clemson, let's say, right, this year, week 1, it's maybe not as important as it used to be by a tiny little bit. What you're doing is you're elevating 30 or 40 more games a year across the country and keeping people interested for longer. And what you're doing in the process, let's say Tennessee gets into the playoff 2 years from now. Everything works. Josh Heupel's a genius. They can recruit like crazy. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, Tennessee's competing for a division spot.
Scoring 45 a game.
They don't win the division, but they're 10-2. They get in as a 10 seed, and they're playing number 7 Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
They go up to Madison, and they win. You don't think that team is celebrated on campus for 30 years?
Oh, for sure.
Everybody on campus is. Now, eventually, Tennessee fans are going to want a national title, and Tennessee is capable of competing for that. But for most teams in college football, that group of people that does that thing is going to be celebrated forever.
Right.
And in the process, we get dozens of really interesting, important, fun games. it's absolutely still going to be Bama and Clemson in the championship game. We are not solving that problem.
No doubt. And I think when you and I and Steve Lassen do the Athlon College Pod, you know, we talked about it and we threw out those numbers. You know, the average margin of victory is roughly 20 points a game in this current playoff format. So it's money for them. It's change for you, the person who wants all this, you know, extra access to a playoff. But at the end of the day, we're still going to have, by and large, now maybe there will be an upset here and there, but we're still going to have the same margin of victory. Like, what is Alabama and Clemson and the teams that we're sick of seeing, or some people are sick of seeing, going to do in this opening round format?
Well, they won't have to play.
Well, the first time they take the field.
So you won't have to watch it. But that's the point. You get eight, you get four other games with eight teams that are not Alabama and Clemson.
But how many of those games, like, if you're being objective about it, so,
they're going to be good.
They might be good, but let's just say you're a Wisconsin guy, you're a Tennessee guy, like you just mentioned, going up to Wisconsin. Like, okay, great, we win that game, we advance, it's the biggest accomplishment we've had in a long, long time. But we know what's looming ahead. So
It doesn't matter.
You don't think that changes anything?
It doesn't matter. No, because you're closer than you were before.
But are you really?
Yes, because you have something to actually celebrate. Like, that's the difference here, is that, again, let's think about the SEC and think about the middle class. Don't think about the top tier, Bama, these guys. You have to think about the middle class.
Right.
And I can explain more when we come back, but Kentucky, Missouri, South Carolina, Arkansas, the middle class of the SEC is who benefits from this. They have an outside chance now to get to the playoff. They never had that before.
Yeah.
I'll explain why it's good.
All right. 615-737-1045. If you guys would like to jump in, hit us up on Twitter at Braden Gall, at Nick Kale. Hour two of the Buck Rising Show comes up next here on 104.5 The Zone and Zone TV.